For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, so please do subscribe. And I feel that for this one, we should have moved some IKEA furniture into the shot, because I'm starting this week with a tip of the Allen key to Stockholm, Sweden, city number 30 on our all-time view list, where on the date of filming, the projected high will be 17 Celsius due to global warming. We maybe also should have included some piece of cheesily offensive anti-Christian art, because the top item in this week's newsletter was the Olympic opening ceremony's mockery of the Last Supper, which the organizers apparently thought made them look edgy and brave. But as Father Raymond J. D'Souza, who's a Roman Catholic priest as well as an opinion columnist, wrote in the National Post, the whole show actually made them look like hypocrites because, quote, the most fashionable religion of the Olympic elites is climate change. Their faith has its own high priests, moral codes, heretics, and public sinners, end quote. In devotion to which faith, the organizers broadcast pieties about the greenest games ever, medals made from recycled metal, the absence of air conditioning, chauffeured vans or limousines for competitors, stiff cardboard beds to sleep on, and a mainly vegan menu. To which point the athletes began to pine for the old gods, especially as the organizers were secretly still indulging heathen pleasures while handing out hair shirts to mere athletes. Canada's state-funded CBC was ready with the usual hellfire and brimstone, warning that, quote, athletes have a ferocious new opponent, climate change, end quote. And of course, with this year's games being held in France, quote, Europe is warming faster than other continents, end quote. Just like every other place, which is warming faster than every other. And additional issues apparently involve, quote, fires, floods, melting, end quote. Though, if you were looking for an opening parade of actual high-performance data showing that any of these things were getting worse in France or generally, you were, of course, in the wrong stadium altogether, as you doubtless expected. But here's the weird bit. All this penance, right down to denying athletes enough protein and denying them water bottles if they walked to the stadium, were just for the proles. As Father D'Souza observed, organizers and some special guests got the flesh pots. Quote, the priestly caste is in luxury hotels with air-conditioned rooms and chauffeured cars. Special indulgences are granted to the favored. LeBron James and his fellow NBA players and the stars of international tennis are not in the Olympic Village. This hypocrisy is especially galling. The high-metabolism athletes get faux burgers, while the corpulent executives gaze at menus featuring meats flown in from overseas or graze at buffets groaning with caloric excess, end quote. Amazing! They get a golden hypocrisy as well as hyperbole. What a performance! The audience goes wild. In the newsletter, we also quote the Canadian political insider publication Hill Times, which is excited that U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has said the green transition will cost, quote, no less than $3 trillion, end quote, a year, yet conceding that the whole thing somehow might not be happening. Between ratification of the original Kyoto Protocol in 1997 and last year, consumption of hydrocarbon energy, the Hill Times notes, rose 56% even as the share of global energy from fossil fuels nudged down from 85.7% to 81.5%. And it's not just the usual government-led touch. It's because of a fundamental fact you can't propagandize away. Green energy, for all its massive subsidies, has not taken off, except rhetorically, because it just can't get the job done and we do need energy to live. Which rather raises the question of what we're meant to spend that $3 trillion on and whether we'll get value for our money or just cardboard beds, tofu, and sanctimony. Hi, I interrupt myself with a different look because this is our webinar setup and I want to let you know that we have another one coming up with distinguished climatologist Dr. Judith Curry on Wednesday, September the 25th. It'll be at 3 p.m. Eastern, that's noon Pacific, and prime time for our friends in the UK and Western Europe. And it is free, but you have to register. So please click the link or else email us at info@climatedn.com and we'll send you directions. If that time doesn't work for you, we will post it on YouTube once it's ready, but I hope you can join us live. And now, back to me with the usual setup. In the newsletter, we also bring you, from the bottom of the scare barrel, quote, Tropical Storm Maria is forecast to make landfall in the Tohoku region on Monday. Only two previous tropical storms on record have made landfall on Tohoku's Pacific coast, one in August of 2016 and the other in July 2021, end quote. Alas, as far as can be determined, on record for this part of Japan means since 1991. And their more complete record of typhoons making landfall anywhere in that country since 1951 has hundreds of entries, and those making landfall somewhere in Tohoku has 213. Still, at last a storm. Woohoo! And indeed, the New York Times Climate Forward hollers, quote, "The water is here," end quote, because, quote, "Tropical Storm Debby is a reminder of the Southeast's climate vulnerabilities," end quote. You see, they say it's, quote, "an area of the country that isn't always top of mind when it comes to the most severe effects of climate change," end quote, and then adds, quote, "Sure, the West has droughts and fires. Yes, the Midwest has floods and violent winds. And it's true the Northeast is experiencing intensifying humidity and sea level rise. But the 11 southeastern states are uniquely susceptible to much of that and more," end quote. It's just that nobody living there noticed it. Oh, and from the "it does not mean what you think it means" file, the Wikipedia article on the Neogene, which is the geological period between the Paleogene, that ended exactly roughly 23.03 million years ago, and the Quaternary, that supposedly started approximately 2.58 million years ago, contrasts its temperature with that of pre-industrial times and declares it 0.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial. We are not making this up. But they might as well be, since the total global industrial activity index for the period before man domesticated fire at all, let alone used it to pressurize steam and drive crankshafts, was a small pile of pointed sticks, bone fishhooks, and a few sharpened stones. Guys, everything before 1776 is pre-industrial. Really. And it was mostly a lot warmer than today. Really. Also, Phys.org runs a piece saying, quote, "A new study provides the first direct evidence that the center, not just the edges, of Greenland's ice sheet melted away in the recent geological past, and the now ice-covered island was then home to a green tundra landscape," end quote. But then Willis Eschenbach fixed their headline to read, quote, "Greenland fossil discovery proves that despite lower CO2 levels, the Earth was warmer in the past," end quote. Dang. Also in the newsletter, we mock Scientific Climate Alarmism, or whatever they now call that publication, for commenting that, quote, "warmer temperatures were supposed to make Arctic shipping easier," end quote, but instead, quote, "the melting of local ice due to global warming enables thicker ice from Greenland to flow into the corridor's choke points, reducing the length of time when ships could move through the passage," end quote. So, you got that? Melting Arctic ice is causing more Arctic ice. Dang again. Also in the newsletter, we deplore the strange side effect of climate change that people start regarding any odd weather as significant, despite the fact that weather has always been odd. For instance, quote, "California's Highway 1 is among the world's truly magical stretches of road, but since January 2023, it hasn't been possible to drive the full 656-mile length of it. The highway is missing a middle following landslides last year. Our correspondent reports on the iconic route's slow surrender to climate change," end quote. Or the Atlantic Weekly Planet blaming climate change for a decline in America's public swimming pools. Because everybody knows, right? Even when they don't. Hence a story on a landslide that blocked the Chilcotin River in British Columbia quoted a randomly selected, dependable money, quote, geologist that, quote, "this particular landslide, I don't think, has any link to climate change, but we certainly should expect more big landslides as our climate warms and gets wetter," end quote. So, climate change causes even things it doesn't cause, including mudslides on a California highway that was long plagued by mudslides. And from the Pictures Worth a Thousand Words department, we note that Chris Bartz has now done a map like the one he did for the United States, but this time using Environment Canada data and showing the record highs by Canadian province and territory by decade. And it turns out that the record was set in the 2020s for British Columbia and the Northwest Territories, but in the 1920s for Newfoundland and Labrador and for Quebec, in the 2000s for Yukon, the 1980s for Nunavut, the 1970s for Ontario, and the 1930s for Alberta, Manitoba, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, and Saskatchewan. Almost as if the 1930s had been the hottest decade in the last 500 years. Strange, isn't it? And then there's the strange way that the herd of independent minds has stampeded on Kamala Harris's vice presidential pick, including those obsessed with person-made climate change. For instance, the New York Times says, quote, "Tim Walz, known for his folksy persona and rural Midwestern roots, has elevated the issue of climate change in his state," end quote. And Scientific American says, quote, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz will promote climate action as Kamala Harris's vice presidential pick, experts say, end quote. Experts no less, though it turns out that it's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Still, there's something we don't understand. When the New York Times climate forward puffs, quote, Tim Walz's big climate ambitions, end quote, does it mean that Joe Biden and, his VP didn't have those? Or that Barack Obama didn't? Or does it mean that lots of politicians have vainglorious plans but haven't thought through how to make them happen, including, Harris's running mate? Dang yet again. Also, speaking of the hottest this and that ever by some tiny fragment of a degree, a regrettable aspect of the climate change debate is the way in which people assume that we know things we don't. For instance, an article in AAOS Now, which if you do not saw through people's bones regularly, you may not know is the newsletter of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, warns that in the process of fixing your hip, they may be doing something nasty to the planet. Which seems improbable, given the relatively small share of the U.S. economy held by the orthopedic sector. And also because the authors of this article appear to have no idea whatsoever what they're talking about. The piece actually starts, and I quote, as usual, 2023 was the warmest year on Earth since global records began being tracked in 1850, end quote. What? By whom? How? Actually, there were very few monitoring stations back then, and there was certainly no coordinated effort, and most of what some people think we know consists of unreliable computer manipulations of current data compared to invented baselines from the past. If those authors had said something comparably culpably ignorant about medicine, you would flee from their clinic as fast as you could hobble. In the newsletter, we also continue our cheerful chart series by noting that while alarmists are rarely clear on when man-made climate change began, and when they are clear, they're never consistent, they are convinced that it's always worse than expected and that we're already experiencing an existential threat from it. And yet, if we look at something as simple as the amount of food available per person since 1961, given that one of climate change's dire, supposedly self-evident consequences is meant to be crop failure, we see only a relentless increase in rich and poor regions alike. So for anyone who thinks that food is better than starvation and abundance is better than famine, we present this week's cheerful chart, World Per Capita Food Supply. In the newsletter, we also discuss a detailed statistical analysis in a global scientific study undertaken by 258 authors, and yes, that does seem a little excessive, involving nearly 60,000 participants in 63 countries and published in the prestigious journal Science, that found that when it comes to climate change, people will tell pollsters what they want to hear as long as they don't have to do anything. And the detailed findings are even worse for the social engineering brigade than that bald summary would imply, because it showed that most of the propaganda messages that increase people's stated beliefs in climate change and willingness to promise to do stuff that takes no time and costs nothing, like sharing posts on social media, actually decrease their willingness to sponsor tree planting efforts simply by sticking around longer on the survey website. Thus, government propagandists could actually help the climate cause that they believe in so fervently by shutting up. And we say go for it. Finally, from the CO2science.org archive, we hailed approaching fall, and with the appearance of fresh apples at Canadian farmers' markets, with a couple of studies that say, astoundingly, that they too love CO2. So, for the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, happy that a CO2 a day keeps the tree doctor away.